The News and Public Affairs Department at KWED brings to you the Saturday Topic, a weekly discussion of current events. Good morning, I'm Darren Dunn. We continue to give you information about the candidates that are appearing on the ballot here in Guadalupe County. All of the contested local races are on the Republican side, and typically we only cover the contested races, but I thought we needed to make an exception this time around because we have a position that is not normally uncontested, but that is the case this time around. It's the position of Guadalupe County Judge. County Judge Kyle Cutcher decided he is not seeking re-election, and Precinct 3 Commissioner Michael Carpenter stepped up. He was the only candidate to file for this position and is now running unopposed for the Republican nomination. He joins us this morning. Mr. Carpenter, good morning. Welcome to the Saturday Topic.
Good morning, Darren. Thanks for having me today.
You know, I wanted you to come on. I know you don't have an opponent during the Republican primary in March, but I think it was important to have you come on and share a little bit about yourself. But before we do that, why are you running? What made you decide that you wanted to run for county judge?
Well, you know, I wasn't planning to run against Judge Cutcher. I thought he did a fantastic job. I think that he has put his heart and soul into the work. And I asked him if he would please serve another term. And in the end, his decision was he did not want to serve another term. And that's great. I understand. You know, focus on family and other things in life. He's given more than a dozen years. But it was always an interest of mine to serve as county judge. And I feel like I got that interest after spending 7 years in the mayor's chair and shirts and having the opportunity to serve in a capacity to help an organization move forward. All organizations have opportunity to improve and get better at what they do and become more efficient, more effective. And I was able to do that, I feel like, when I was in the mayor's chair and shirts, and I'm just hopeful I can do the same in the judge's chair in Guadalupe County.
You were mayor of the city of shirts at a time where it was experiencing rapid growth.
Absolutely.
That growth on that part of the county continues. But it really, it's growing across Guadalupe County now. We're one of the fastest growing communities in the nation. What kind of challenge does that represent for you once you take over as county judge?
Yeah, the growth challenge is multifaceted. And it's interesting, too. I look at Guadalupe County in roughly sort of three zones with growth. South of 10 and moving toward the east, not a lot happening right now. Probably won't be for a good while. In between 10 and 78, there's some things starting to happen, particularly south of 78, in the Marion, Santa Clara area. And then as you get up closer toward New Braunfels, and between 78 and 35, it's so fast, it's hard to keep our arms around it. And what does that kind of residential growth do to local governments and local school districts? Well, if it's very fast the way that it is for us, it's difficult to respond in real time to all of that new traffic, all of those new folks, all of those new students, all of the demands on infrastructure, on public safety. They're all instantaneously challenged with that kind of growth. And when I say that kind of growth, in Precinct 4 alone, there are somewhere in the neighborhood of 13,000 platted single-family residential lots today. Those builders are not going to sit on those lots. They're going to build homes. Let's just say on average, there's going to be three people in those homes. That's 39,000 people. That means more work for the Sheriff's Department. That means more work for the city and volunteer and Guadalupe County Fire Departments. More business at the clerk's offices. More work for the county attorney. Every single department in the county will be affected by that growth in population. Every school district, every municipality. Now, you may say, well, not to ask a question for you, what do we do? What do we do with that kind of unprecedented growth happening in our county? And again, that is not a single thing. It's not a single switch that we can flip in response to that. But we have to work together across all of the departments in the county as a team in responding to what's happening around us. We have to work not only amongst ourselves, but with our local partners, the cities. Green Valley SUD, as an example, a lot of the growth in Precinct 4 is in that special utility district. We have to have a strong relationship with them as well. And we have to work with our state legislature and inform them of what's happening in our part of the state and the things that we need to be able to manage that in an effective manner that doesn't have a deleterious effect on any of our constituent partners. Sorry for the long-winded response.
No, it's perfect, and it leads into my next part of that whole growth equation, is that counties are limited into what they can do as far as any sort of restrictions, unlike cities that have zoning powers, and
right.
They can put in all of these restrictions and try to really manage their growth. Counties aren't afforded those same opportunities. So how do you begin to address that? One, you got to react to the growth that's happening on the ground now. But
yes,
in the pipeline, as you mentioned, not just Precinct 4, but so many other of these potential,
yes,
subdivisions and communities coming online, how do you begin to address what's coming in the future?
Yeah. Again, it's a multifaceted approach that's required. One of the very first things that we do is, and it's in front of the court right now, is getting the Master Thoroughfare Plan completed. That's an incredibly important first step in broadcasting to the development community that if they want to come in and develop, they're going to have to participate in helping to build out our infrastructure. The second thing is our development regulations. Now, we don't have zoning, as you pointed out, like cities do, but we are able to put together development regulations within this local government code and other parts of state law. That is in the process right now of being updated and in many ways taken to its statutory limits. And why do I say taking the development regulations to the statutory limits? Because a number of developers over time will come in and have come in and said, that doesn't really work for me with your Master Thoroughfare Plan and all of your requirements in your development regulations. I need a variance. Well, when I hear that coming from my role in the mayor's office, well, if you want to deviate from our regulations, as we would if we had a zoning in a city, then we need to have a conversation about potentially entering into a development agreement. If you want us to give something, we need you to give something. And that provides a framework in a development agreement to have what is effectively or acts as effectively as a planned development district zoning in a city, because there's going to be a contractual agreement between us, the county, and what that developer is going to build, how they're going to build it. And unless we come together, then there's no variance for, you know, following on their request. That's part of what we do. Again, going to the state legislature and letting our representatives know what that growth is causing, and if there are tweaks that can be made to give us a little bit more authority or a little bit more ability to negotiate as a county entity, given our, I would say, unique growth position, we're going to need help from them as well.
One of the things I think is uniquely Texan as far as government goes is that these sovereignty issues of, is my land and I can do whatever I want to do with it. And
yes,
that's part of the tension here, right? I mean, people have rights to do whatever they want to do, whether it's an individual or family or developer.
Yes.
That's part of what you have to do in managing this overall situation, is respecting their rights while also, yeah, making sure it's not going to be a hindrance to their neighbors.
It's a delicate balance, even in a city where you have zoning authority and far more broad controls, if you will. It's a delicate balance. And part of what we can do as well, and that I would really like for us to do, and I think you may have heard me say this when I was still on the court, is revising our 2018 strategic plan. Not only is it a strategic plan about what we wish to do as a county, but we can add other things in there and directly address the development community. Say, these are the kinds of things that we would like to see. These are the kind of things that we need in our county. These are the kind of things that are not our favorite things, and try to get in front of that development, and maybe, just maybe, all of those things together, including that messaging, developers will come to us and say, you know what you say you need, that's what I like to build. Let's have a conversation.
Michael Carpenter is our guest on the Salary Topic. He's running unopposed for Guadalupe County Judge. You mentioned the Master Thoroughfare Plan, and it's gotten a lot of attention on the Commissioner's Court, particularly here as of late. This is one of those situations that I also think is very tricky because you need that kind of planning in place. You're required to have it in place. Mm-hmm. But it can be wildly unpopular with people when they see it and they go, hey, you have this highway running through my front yard. How do you begin to make sure that you're able to get what the county needs as far as planning for the future, while also respecting people and saying, this is not happening now. This is something really big would have to change. How do you handle that situation?
Well, first of all, you kind of make the point for me in saying this is not going to happen now. When a city or a county puts forth a master thoroughfare plan, it's not a plan for that city or that county to go and build those roads. It's not a matter of the county or city is going to come along and use its powers of eminent domain to take land and build something.
But it's always looked at that way by people who look at
absolutely
on the outside who look at that plan. They go, "Why are you wanting to build this road here on my property?"
And I'm going to answer that as if you were asking me the question. We don't want to build a road there on your property. We would be thrilled to see that property stay just like it is into perpetuity. But we don't live here in perpetuity as human beings. That property is going to pass to someone else, your children, heirs, whoever you may specify, and they may have a different plan for that. When that plan gets executed on, if it ever does, then the infrastructure needs to be in place by the purchaser, most often the developer, rather than the taxpayers having to pay for that right of way via eminent domain. It's really more an exercise of how do we plan for the future, not taking from anyone, but when they decide to sell their property, there is a plan in place for the roadway, and instead, and that's, it's really relatively inexpensive to the taxpayer because the developer is having to dedicate that right of way. The taxpayer is not having to pay for the county to use eminent domain to build it after the fact. So, one, it's not something that's going to happen today. Two, it's not something that the county or the city that puts in a master thoroughfare plan wants to go and build and take people's land to build it. It is there in preparation for reaction to development that will come in the future.
As the county continues to grow, so does the demand for service.
Yes.
The county has already gotten into the fire and rescue business, yes. Something that the court was very hesitant to do for a very long time. But I'm assuming that was done, that the court is essentially came to the realization that was a necessity. Are we going to see more and more of that kind of, those kind of services being provided that you might normally associate with a city?
The answer to that is yes. And I'll use an example that I have. There's a relatively new subdivision just north of Seguin. It's outside the ETJ, extraterritorial jurisdiction of Seguin. And when it's fully built out, when we look at all of the cities in the county, it will be the sixth or seventh largest city in the county, a subdivision. Meaning, we're going to have subdivisions in unincorporated areas of the county that have been built by these developers that are going to be the size of some of our cities, that are going to be four and five times the size of some of the cities that exist. So we will be, as a county, de facto cities, if you will, because we're going to have to manage those. So yes, there will be more. Now the question that's really important is, how do we do that? Is it all Guadalupe County Fire and Rescue? Is it an ongoing cooperation with the volunteer fire departments? Is it expanded contracts with the fire departments in our cities? And the answer is all of those, at least in the short term. Now, someone also might say, well, come on, Carp, why did you guys form a fire department in the first place? Why not ESDs? I was pretty much against forming a county fire department in the beginning. But then I got an opportunity to get a little education about what happens when you form ESDs, and I'm sorry, emergency services districts.
Sure.
When you form an ESD, yes, they're very good at what they do, but that's also creating another taxing entity with another board, with another need to purchase legal services and accounting and all of, you start to have redundancy amongst operations. In the end, my belief, and I don't want to speak for the other members of the court, but from my perspective, I believe the reason we did it was so as not to have that redundancy of function in yet another taxing authority. And so over time, while the county is spending more and more money on developing Guadalupe County Fire and Rescue, ultimately we're spending less than we would if we had multiple ESDs.
It provides some continuity of service, does it not? Also,
not only continuity of service, but an element of control, right? So if we find ourselves truly in a natural disaster, something goes crazy, we have 5 times the tornadoes that we had a few years ago, or a hurricane comes in from the Gulf and parks itself 25 miles outside of Seguin, we will have the resources in place to respond without asking. Now, granted, and I don't want to go down yet another trail of things that I want us to consider and work on in the county. Granted, we will and do have relationships with all of the cities, with all of the volunteer fire departments, with everyone who has resources that can be brought to bear in a natural disaster. But our locus of control is bigger when we have in-house services. Now, again, a delicate balance. Do we want to have so much that we can't fix our roads, but we have a fantastic fire department? Do we want to have a fantastic fire department and not have our sheriff's department funded as much as it needs to be with the same growth concerns? It's a delicate balance, but it's one where I think we're in a better position than if we had 3 or 4 ESDs that we had to call up and say, hey, guys, it's time to mobilize. Instead, hey, fire chief, we got to go.
The Guadalupe County Commissioner's Court has had a reputation for a long time for being fiscally conservative and yes, really trying to control the purse strings as far as what the taxpayers give them. I think one of the reasons the court has been able to do that is all of the growth that's occurring. So you have this tax base that continues to go up. But at some point, you're going to have to make some additional investments, whether it's a new county jail, or I mean, there's going to be some big ticket items coming up.
There are.
Are you going to have to at some point go to the taxpayers and say, are you willing to make this investment maybe through a bond or through some other funding mechanism?
So that's one of the parts. That's a facet of what we will need to do. We will need to look at potentially issuing debt over time, because it's kind of, do you know how you see sometimes school districts will build a brand new school, and the day that new school opens, they have outbuildings out there as well, right? They have portables. It's very difficult to get ahead of that growth curve. We probably will have to use some debt mechanisms to stay ahead of that curve. As an aside, though, another way to help fund those things is with commercial investment. We will need to be working closely with the economic development corporations from the cities in our county that have them, with the San Antonio Foundation, which kind of helps to bring things to the region, and find ways to get good corporate investment, business investment, that has a low overhead as far as county services required, but produce a lot of revenue. That is a piece of the pie, so that's not all on the taxpayers themselves. But yes, over time, I think that some amount of debt issuance with economic development work, that combination is going to be required. One other thing that's a possibility, and we see this in Fort Bend County right now rather prolifically, if you will, are county assistance districts. Now, that is where a county can put to the ballot. We can't just decide it on our own. All we can do is put it on a ballot and ask the people in certain areas, would you prefer a sales tax as opposed to a property tax? Yeah, so consumption instead of property, right? To help fund some of the things that are in your county assistance district. Those funds can be used. There's a discrete number of things they can be used for, primarily roads and fire protection and police. There's a couple of other uses, but that may be a third facet of how we address paying for all of the new demands from the county.
You've talked about those districts before.
Yes.
And I got the sense from the court that, well, maybe they weren't quite ready to have that discussion just yet.
It's probably true. It's going to be time. But by the time that I come into office, and harken back to what we talked about a few minutes ago, 13,000 platted single-family residential lots in Precinct 4 alone, that's coming at us, and we're going to have all of the tools that we have available to us from the state in our toolbox in order to be successful.
You mentioned economic development. You guys have great partnerships with the cities. There's regional partners that come in as well, and you guys have been good partners to them in return, in helping to support the economic growth here in Guadalupe County. Is it time for the county to have a player or two players or staff that can help further those, enhance those partnerships?
I think there's an interim step, actually. I think that the county might do well to enter into partnerships, as we've done with the cities for fire services and such, with their economic development corporations. I don't know that it's time for us to have headcount in our organization that may be shortly down the road, but I think in the interim we can contract with multiple or one or more economic development corporations to do some of that work for us. When we win, they win, right? And so I think that's a very probable interim step that's very cost effective for the county as well.
We're going to run out of time, so I have a couple of questions I wanted to make sure we got to. One is, I mean, it's pretty simple. Were you surprised you did not end up with an opponent? It has been unlikely in my time here in Guadalupe County, the 30-plus years or so that I've been around, to not have a contested race for county judge.
I was completely surprised. I was cautiously optimistic and hopeful, but I will tell you, I sat in the Starbucks in shirts where the Guadalupe County Republican representative was sitting, waiting for filers, and I just sat there waiting for someone to walk in and wondering when it was going to happen, and it didn't. And I was just very surprised. And then there was another representative from the party that was in Seguin, and I asked the gentleman that was sitting across from me, did anybody file in Seguin? And he texted and said, no one's filed. And then I went to the website and checked, and I saw no one filed from the Democratic Party, Green Party, Libertarian, no other filers at all. And I was very surprised. I was very surprised. I was just a little insider. I had 24-foot by 8-foot signs, and they're still in my garage. They were ready to go, and my wife has told me, get them out of my garage.
Michael Carpenter is our guest on the Sorry Topic program. He's running unopposed for Guadalupe County judge. You know, I think most of the county judges have, I mean, this was a largely rural county for a long time.
Yes.
But I think in recent memory, most of those county judges had ties to the Seguin area. I know Judge Ketcher lives up closer to the Zorin area, but you're going to be the first one from the West End.
Yeah.
Which, are we past that time of even talking about Guadalupe County in terms of, he's from the West End, or he's from Shirts? Are we beyond that? And what does this mean to the people in Seguin who traditionally have expected someone who had really close ties to them to be sitting in that seat?
I want to tell you that for me personally, that's of the past. We have a very important job ahead of us as a county, and it affects the entire county. And if the east southern side of the county has a big win, the whole county wins. If Seguin has economic development wins, the whole county wins. If I was just to think about the west end of the county and make that my priority, that would be a disservice to the job that the public is going to let me do. And I can't imagine that being the case in any way, shape, or form. And when I say we have a lot of work to do, and if you don't mind, this is top of mind for me as I contemplate swearing in. Judge Kutcher and the previous judges and commissioners have given us an amazing foundation of a county government. There are some things that I would like to do with regard to organizational culture and cooperation and teamwork that I could not do if that foundation was not there. And that organizational culture that I wanted to build upon, again, collaboration and teamwork and all of the departments seeing each other and understanding what effect each department has on the other, that is a countywide endeavor. That is not looking to any portion of the county. It's the whole organization.
Before I let you go, I want you to share the story you told me before we went on the air. You've been at this political thing, sort of, for a long time. Tell me about that.
Well, in addition to spending 40 years in the private sector, I am coming up on my 20th year in total in public office. And people ask me often, Carp, how'd you get into this, man? What makes somebody want to do this? And it began when I was elected president of my kindergarten class. And my teacher, Mrs. Barziaki, explained to me that my sole duty as president of the kindergarten class was to take a radio flyer wagon over to the lunchroom, pick up the milk order, bring the little cartons of milk in school, bring those back to our classroom, because the kindergartners ate in the classroom. And my job was, before I got to eat, I passed out the milk to all of my classmates. And I got my first taste of leadership being a servant activity, and I was hooked.
Michael Carpenter is running unopposed for the Guadalupe County judge position. He gave up his seat on as the Precinct 3 commissioner in order to do this, so he's effectively unemployed until January 1 of 2027.
Which is why my wife says I have no excuse for those signs still being in my garage.
Get those signs out. Michael Carpenter, I appreciate you coming in and sharing some time with us today.
The pleasure is mine entirely.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. We'll come back with more right after this.